Hello, everyone. It's Bill Thompson, T-Bill, and welcome to Plain Market Talk, where I will provide a straightforward interpretation and analysis of current market news based on my background as a retired Wall Street stockbroker with almost 50 years of experience. And I will also provide business lessons to help you become much more successful with your personal finance, trading, and investments. So let's get started. Hey everyone, it's Bill Thompson, T-Bill. Welcome to Plain Market Talk. Today is Thursday, November 30th, 2023. Okay, it's 6:31 in the evening Eastern Time. Take a look at what went on with the markets. Markets actually had a really good month, so we'll see what went on there. Got some other news to talk about. And today I'm going to continue on mutual funds. Some introductory comments in regards to index funds. So we'll talk about all that. Okay, so as far as the markets, well, first of all, they were rather mixed today, somewhat flat. We had the Dow Jones Industrial Average up 1.47%, S&P 500 up 0.38%, and the NASDAQ Composite down 0.23%. But that doesn't tell the story. The month of November was just a really, really good month for the markets. You know, I've talked about this before. Statistically and historically, the three best months of the year for the markets have been November, December, and January, sometimes called a Santa Claus rally. Now, that may not hold up this year, but so far things are looking really, really good. So as far as the month of November, which is now just ended, we've got the, let's see, how'd it look? Okay, here we go. The Dow Jones Industrial Average was up 8.8% just for the month. That's not an annualized rate. It was actually up 8.8% in the month of November. That's its best month since October 2022. The S&P 500 was up 8.9%, and the NASDAQ Composite up 10.7%. So overall, yeah, looking good. Several things. Corporate earnings came in better than expected. We also have inflation continuing to come down. We had a big inflation report come out today. The Personal Consumption Expenditures Index, PCE Index. I've talked about this in the past. This is an inflation measure that the Federal Reserve tends to favor. Basically showed that for the month of October, inflation was running up at 0.2% for the month. However, when you look at inflation compared to 1 year ago, the annualized rate was 3.5% for the year, quite a bit down from the 9.5% we had a year or so ago. So inflation is continuing to come down, although the Federal Reserve is still looking to get inflation down to about 2%. But the feeling of the market is that with inflation, seeming to keep coming down, there might be less pressure on the Federal Reserve to raise interest rates. The idea is if interest rates go up, investors sell stocks, they buy bonds. But if there's a slowing down of the interest rate increases, maybe not. So the market liked all that news. Okay, we got some other things to talk about here today. Let's see. For those of you, I just did a whole big long session on cryptocurrencies. And the Securities and Exchange Commission met today with several. Who'd they meet with? They met with Grayscale. That is a they manage cryptocurrencies, and also BlackRock. That is a big investment firm about possibly starting a cryptocurrency-based exchange-traded fund sometime in 2024, probably more earlier in the year than later. What an exchange-traded fund is, it's related to the mutual funds that I've been covering, but also known as ETFs. It's when a large number of investors have their money pooled together to buy a collection of assets. Well, the idea is that what would happen, the pooled money would be used to buy cryptocurrencies. That's one reason Bitcoin has been doing fairly well the last few months, the assumption that that would be one of the major ones bought by these ETFs. So it would be a way for investors, everyday people, probably with small amounts of money, to make direct investments in cryptocurrencies. The idea your money's pooled together with others buys a collection of cryptocurrencies. And what the portfolio managers would do, they would decide how much, what type of cryptocurrency they would buy, when to sell. And there would be fees involved, as with any other mutual fund. But the idea is you got the convenience and you've also got the ability to be invested in a wide, diversified number of cryptocurrencies. So we'll see what's going on more with that. But Securities and Exchange Commission, it says it is formally engaging with asset managers ahead of a much anticipated decision on whether the regulator will approve a Bitcoin exchange traded fund. All right. So we'll keep an eye on that news. Taylor Swift, you know, I've talked about that movie she released back in October for the Eras Tour. Her tour just ended. It restarts in February. So, yeah, she announced it's coming out on home video December 13th. So that's, I believe, a Wednesday, a couple of weeks from now. Interesting. They didn't release a price or if you could even buy it. It may just be for rental, but it's going to be on a lot of streaming platforms, Amazon Prime, Apple, other places. But one thing I looked at, you know, because I look at a lot of things from a financial standpoint, I was looking at some of her concert ticket prices because I know she's doing three shows here in Florida next year in Miami. And let's assume you could rent that movie for maybe $20, maybe $25, rent or buy it. Yeah, her tickets seem to be, just looking at the middle level tickets, about $1,800. So, you know, I was pointing out somebody, you could probably buy the movie and buy a high-end television, TV, to watch it at home, cheaper than you can buy a concert ticket. But many will say it's still not the same. So anyway, we got that news out there also. What else do we have? Oh, yeah, Apple. Apple has that Apple Card in partnership with the big Wall Street investment bank, Goldman Sachs. One thing, too, investment banks are Wall Street brokerage firms. Commercial banks are, you know, J.P. Morgan Chase, Wells Fargo, but Wall Street brokerage firms, investment banks. Anyway, Goldman Sachs, apparently they want out of the deal. They claim they're losing billions of dollars over this. They're basically stating that Apple has pushed them to approve a larger amount of applicants than they would have. And I guess they've got more than the industry average of people not making payments on time. That's one issue Goldman Sachs has. The other one is Apple apparently was insisting that everybody's bill go out on the same day of the month. Now, I know a problem with that just from financial firms. If you have a monthly bill, you know, minimum payment or whatever, go out on the same day every month, their customer service departments get overwhelmed with phone calls from people. And so they try to spread it out. But anyway, apparently that's an issue with Goldman Sachs. So for those of you that have an Apple Card, is it going to disappear? No. What'll happen? Apple, they're talking 12 to 15 months to end a relationship. All that will happen is Apple will hook up with another financial firm. I've already seen some names being thrown around. One name was American Express. I don't think it'll be them. American Express tends to go off after a more high-end market than Apple's going after with this Apple Card. Synchrony was another one. I don't think so. Synchrony goes after a more lower income bracket than Apple's going after. Apple's going like middle to high is what they're going for. So more than likely, it's going to be somebody like Barclays or somebody. But for those of you that have Apple Cards, I don't see any scenarios that's just going to disappear. And the change from Goldman Sachs, say maybe Barclays or somebody, it'd probably be almost transparent to you. You might not even notice much of a difference. So we got that news also. Okay, what else we got here? One other thing I wanted to talk about. Yeah, Bob Iger, first of all, it was just announced just a little bit ago, Disney is reinstating its dividend, cut of the profits, 30 cents per share of stock per quarter. That's fairly significant. Disney stopped its dividend when COVID hit 3 years ago, and they've reinstated it. Companies are careful about reinstating or raising dividends because they try to never lower it once it's in place. So Disney feels confident going forward. But yeah, Bob Iger, you know, he's acknowledging to the shareholders, Disney movies have not done well this year. Guardians of the Galaxy did well, but they've had a lot of movies underperform, including more recently the Marvels. has underperformed. Wish has underperformed. There's a whole list of them. So he said they're going to really get back more to storytelling for next year. He thinks that that might be what they've lost some focus on that. And also Disney's cutting back on the number of movies released. There's been some comments made that maybe a lot of their technical people are overextended, particularly over in the Marvel world. So they're trying to cut back some. But anyway, so we had that news out there also. Okay, so index funds. All right, so today I'll just make some general comments, but I will be talking more about these. Okay, so mutual funds, I mentioned, where a large number of investors have their money pooled together, and then there are basically managers. One person, two people, or a whole team that manages the money, say with a stock mutual fund. These portfolio managers decide what to buy, when to buy, when to sell, what to sell. And so those are actively managed mutual funds. All right, that's the way most mutual funds out there are. We also have what are called index funds. Now, these are non-managed mutual funds. So here's how this works. We have different ways to measure the stock market, and I've talked about it on previous sessions. One of the more popular ways is the company Standard & Poor's. They have what is called the Standard & Poor's 500 Index, or S&P 500 it's called. It's an index made up of the 500 largest publicly traded stocks in the United States. And for the most part, these are 500 of the largest companies in the world. If you're interested in looking at the list, just use Google or whatever search engine you use and type in S&P 500 list and it comes up. All right. So these companies, the total stock market, we've got around 6,100 stocks between the New York Stock Exchange and the electronic system NASDAQ. Even though these are only 500 of the 6,100, they are 70% of the value of the entire U.S. stock market. And this is where we find the world's largest corporations, Walmart, Amazon, Apple, and IBM, and all the rest. All right. So here's the thing. What S&P 500 Index Mutual Fund does, it simply buys the 500 stocks that make up the S&P 500. It's 501 technically, but anyway, let's get back to it. 500, we'll say 500. It buys the 500 stocks that make up the S&P 500, and it simply holds them. It does not try to trade the market. It simply holds them. So there actually are no portfolio managers in an index fund. There are just administrators. And so what they do is, if Standard & Poor's makes a change to its index, like kicks a company out, adds a new one, then the mutual fund makes the change right away. All right, but here's the thing. Those mutual funds, S&P 500 index fund in particular, and there are many other index funds, I'll talk about those another day, it's been shown to outperform the vast majority of the actively managed mutual funds with a lot less fees. See, when you got people managing these mutual funds, they're going to be compensated. So a lot of these actively managed mutual funds, it's not only management fees, they also have advertising fees built in. For a lot of them, it could be 2% or so of the assets goes to various fees. So if you had a mutual fund that returned 9% for the year, that's what the investments did, and there's 2% in fees, well, you as the investor only get 7%. Talk more about fees another day. But index funds tend to have very, very low expense, what are called expense ratios, a lot of them around a third of 1%, or maybe up to half of 1%. But here's the thing, why do they outperform most of the actively managed funds? I think it's a dilution of talent. You know, I've been doing this stuff, as I've said before, almost 50 years. When I got started, there were probably about 600, 650 mutual funds out there. Today, there's 7,500. And there's only so many people that really have the ability to manage one of these things. It would be like taking the National Basketball Association, it's 30 teams right now, and expand to 300 teams. I mean, there's only so many people that can play basketball at the level of the NBA. And so you're just going to have this massive dilution of talent. And I think that might be part of it, but yeah, these index funds have tended to outperform the market. This is also called the Warren Buffett method of investing. This is the method I was taught when I was a teenager by very experienced stockbrokers. Many of you know, some of you may never have heard of Warren Buffett, but y'all have heard of LeBron James, the basketball player. Just look it up, you know, Google it. Warren Buffett's advice to LeBron James. He talks about the index fund. So I'll talk more about him another day, but I have covered him in the past, but I just want to bring up what they are. So, but there are a lot of, I said, most actively managed funds can outperform index funds, but I emphasize the word most. There are some that do. So we're going to talk some more about how to find those funds, you know, various screeners and so forth that consistently outperform the market. But that'll be for some upcoming sessions. So again, Bill Thompson, T-Bill. Hope everyone's doing well. Talk to you again soon. Take care. See ya.